study now the status of Rus. She came, of course, from Moab, and she was married to a gentleman by the name of Mahlon before she herself returned with her mother-in-law, Naomi, to Eretz Yisrael. And the exact status, halakhically, of Rus at the time, at the critical moment in which she married Mahlon, is very unclear. Was she a, and these are the two possibilities, a Nachriah? She was just a non-Jewish woman, what we call in Yiddish a shiksa. Or was she a convert already? Was it after the Gerus? Which would really mean that Mahlon was able to somehow, I don't know exactly how, not force her, but what's the word I want to use to facilitate her Gerus, even before he married her. Now, if we take a look at the pasuk, it seems to be black and white. There's no question about it. We're opening up now to Perek Aleph of Megillas Rus, and the Megillah tells us in the very second pasuk that Elimelech and his wife Naomi and his two sons, their two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, who came from Beis Lochem in Yehuda, come to stay more. Elimelech dies, and he leaves his wife Naomi together with the two sons, Mahlon and Chilion. Vayisu lahem noshim Moavios, and they married Moavios. I mean, what could be more explicit than that? Okay, then. So therefore, the straightforward pshat in the pasuk would certainly lead us to the conclusion that there was no gerus here. And if you take a look below the text, you'll see the targum.
Yeah.
And if you look in the targum for just a moment, he says explicitly that they were nachrios, and as a punishment for the fact that they married non-Jewish women, their lives were cut short, and they suffered the punishment of death. He says, al di avru, he says, because they violated the memra, gzeras memra d'Hashem, unetolu lahon nashim nechrayim, as a result of this terrible violation, this terrible sin of marrying a non-Jewish woman, therefore, ischatnu ba'amim in nechrayim, iskitou yomeim, their days were cut down, Ubimisan, and they were killed by Hashem. Travayu, both of them, Mahlon Mekilion. So you have no doubt in your mind, therefore, that both according to the straightforward pshat in the pasuk and according to the Targum itself, Mahlon and Kilion married Arpa and Rus as they were Nachrios. And that would certainly seem to be supported by the conversation that took place later between Naomi and her two daughters-in-law. And the pasuk says, this is pasuk Tesvav in the first chapter of Rus, Vatomer hinei shava yivimtech el ama v'el eloha. Go back to your nations. Go back to your gods. Now, if one would assume, which again, that doesn't seem to be very plausible, that the girls had already undergone gerus.
There's no way they can just go
no
back.
Way that Naomi, who was a great tzaddikus, would encourage them to go back to their ways, back to their gods. That's impossible. In fact, if you take a look at the Rambam says that if a person tries to influence someone else to worship another god, to idol worship, that's called a mesis. And the Rambam dedicates the entire fifth chapter of Hilchos Avodas Kochavim to the mesis. And the punishment for a mesis is skila. I mean, that's not not so good, you know, to get skila. So there's obviously an assumption here that Naomi was telling two non-Jewish women to go back to their religions, not to Jewish women. That for sure not. And we would never want to suspect Chas v'Shalom Naomi of fitting into the category of Mesis, and certainly not to influence anyone who's Jewish in any negative way. Certainly not to worship Avodah Zarah, to actually be part of another nation. Then, unless we assume that at that point in time, which is way beyond the marriage, I mean, the two husbands were already gone, that at that point in time, these two women were Nachrios, and that Rus herself would undergo Gerus at some later period of time. Now, if you fast forward to Pasuk Yud Aleph for a second, or rewind, I should say, to Pasuk Yud Aleph, Naomi turns to these two girls, her daughters-in-law, and when they try to impress upon her how sincere they are in joining her, going to Eretz Yisrael, she says to them, "Ha'od li banim b'me'ai, v'hayu lachem l'anashim." Would it be, says Naomi, that I would have the possibility of producing more children, more sons, I would certainly marry them off to you, meaning she's very fond of them. Now, watch what goes on. There's something called Eishes Achiv Shalohaya Ba'olamo, which means the following. Let's say there are two brothers. We'll call them Reuven and Shimon. And Reuven gets married to Leah. And Reuven dies before Shimon is born. Can Shimon marry Leah? No. He cannot marry Leah because they were not alive, Reuven and Shimon, at the same time. If Shimon was a one-day-old baby when his brother Reuven died, then Leah would fall for Yibum to Shimon.
Even though they have to wait.
And that's one of the halachic tragedies in that situation, because Leah could not get remarried for the next 13 years until Shimon becomes bar mitzvah and he can give a chalita. But let's leave that out. I don't want to get sidetracked. What we're really trying to ask here is, would it be halachically possible and permissible for Rus Lidugma, the same question we'd ask for Arpa, to marry her husband's brother if her mother-in-law would give birth after her husband had already died? Meaning, if we assume, let's take the devil's advocate here, that Rus was a Gioris at the time that she married Mahlon, then if Mahlon dies and then Naomi has another son subsequent to Mahlon's death,
There's no way, no how
that Rus could marry Eishes Achiv, right, the wife of her brother Shalohaya Biolomo, who was not alive at the same time. And therefore we're talking about the Iser Erva of Eishes Ach. So let's call this guy by a name. Let's say that Naomi would be able to have a child by the name of Yankala after Mahlon dies. There's no way that Yankala under the sun could halachically marry his brother Mahlon's wife. That's an erev of Eishes Achiv, because he, Yankala, did not coexist with Mahlon.
But if she was a non-Jew and then later on converted, then it
would... Oh, that's the pshat. This is clear proof that she was not Jewish, because if she's not Jewish and then later she converts, she certainly could marry her husband's brother, because it's really not a husband at all. It was what we call a mixed marriage. And halachically, the halacha doesn't recognize the marriage that she had to Mahlon. And therefore, she as Mahlon's wife is not considered an erva to this Yankala who's born later.
That's what you were saying, right? The relatives are not related afterwards.
Correct, they're not related. So the answer clearly is that she was not a Gioris at that point in time. Let's just take a look at the Rambam on the second page. This is the Rambam in Hilchas Yibum, Perek Vav, Halacha Tezayin. The Rambam says, Eishes Achiv Shlohaya Ba'olamo Hoil V'Ein Lo Olea Zika. Right, this Yankel has no Zika to Rus because he did not live and overlap with his brother Machlon at any point. Therefore, there's no Zikas Yibum. Harezu Erva Olav Liola Mishumeshis Ach. She is therefore an Erva to him. So there's no way that Rus could ever consider marrying this guy Yankel. So what does Nami mean when she says, "Ha'odli bonim v'me'ai v'ha'olachem la'anoshim"? I would marry them off if I had another son. That's Eishesachim Shalai Balomo. The answer has to be that at this point in time, Rus is a Nachriya, she's not Jewish, and her Gerus would only come later down the line. And therefore, Enochinami, if Nami would at some point have more children, any of those children, any of those sons, could be a candidate for marriage to Rus. So we've proven over and over again that there is no possibility that Rus was a Gioris at the time that she married Machlon, and the Pasuk itself testifies, Nashim Moavios, that they married Moavios, and the Targum adds that that's why their lives were curtailed, were cut down. And if you look on page 2, you'll see the Medrash Rabbah on Megillas Rus, says the following.
Oh, there it is. That one line?
Yeah, it's just one line. It's easy to miss it. It's the third source on your page. The Medrash says, Tani b'shem Rabbi Meir lo girum v'lo hidbilu osam. The Medrash testifies that there was absolutely no gerus. No, it's Machlon and Kilion were not Magaya Rus and Arpa before they married them. Which could mean only one thing, that the Gerus of Rus, which is the paradigm of Gerus for all time, took place only after she returned from Stei Moav to Eretz Canaan. And that's explicit in the Gemara in Yevamos, which is quoted by Rashi in his commentary on Megillas Rus. If you take a look on page 1, you'll see Rashi on Megillas Rus, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Tes Zayin. And Rashi writes, Mikan Omer Rabbi Seinu Zal, Ger Shebol is Gair Modiin Lo Miktas Onshim. Meaning, when Naomi says to Rus, this is Pasuk Tezayin, let's go back to the Megillah itself, Vatomer Rus Al Tifki Bi Li Ozvech La Shuv Me'acharayach, Ki Es El Asher Telchi Eilech, Ubasher Tolini Olin, this is all part of the process of Gerus. And at this particular point in time, she, Rus, becomes notified and taught about Mitzas Onshim. Rashi says, Shemitot Dvorim Shel Rus Atolomed Shomer Lanami Asur Lanu Latzeis Chutz Litchum B'Shabbos. What was happening? They were on the trip, on the trek from Moab to Eretz Canaan, and they were about to pass over the Tchum. This is all a sugya in Masechta Yevamos. And Nomi says to Rus, I have to teach you that we're not allowed to do so. Amar Allah, so Rus answered, her response was, Basher Telchi Eilech. If that's what the law is, then I'm going to oblige the law, I'm going to obey the law. A woman is not allowed to be alone together with a male who's not her husband. And basically what was going on here was that when Rus says to Nami, Elokayich Elokai, she was accepting upon herself to separate from all the other nations and accept upon herself the 613 mitzvahs asay. Amech ami aso lanu avodas alilim elokai chalokai, etc., etc. I mean, you go through the whole Rashi, we don't have time to go through every different detail of Rashi, but suffice it to say that Rashi evokes the Gemara in Yevamos that establishes that all the dinim of Gerus are derived from that moment in time when Naomi revealed and taught to Rus before they entered into the land of Israel all the laws of the Torah and all the mitzvahs of the Taryag. It's only later on when Rus appears in front of Boaz, and there the pasuk says Rachza, according to Chazal, and this you'll see on page 2, you see Megillas Rus Perek Gimel.
Yeah.
So pasuk Gimel says Verachatzt Vesacht Vesamt Simlo Sayach.
That's the mikvah.
Oh, excellent. Beautiful, Avi. Before we saw Rashi, it's a little bit strange that the Tanakh has to record for all of eternity that Nomi instructed Rus, Verachatz, that she has to take, surely if she's meeting a man and for very serious reasons, she'd be well advised to take a shower first. The answer is, Rashi says, Verachatz mitinuf avodah zarah shalach. This is the process of Gerus, which was complete before she presented herself to Boaz. So therefore, all the many myriad details of Gerus are derived from the dialogue between Naomi and Rus before they entered into the land. Only when Rus presents herself to Boaz, Rachza, which means she had completely left behind any tinuf, any contamination of Avodah Zarah, she was miskayeres. And basically all the proofs that we've adduced appear in a presentation or two of the Gdolei Achronim. When I talk about the Gdolei Achronim, I'm going back like almost 5 centuries to the, to the early Achronim. And these you'll find beautifully laid out on page 2. One is from Alkabetz, who lived, he was a contemporary of the Ari HaKadosh 5 centuries ago. And he has a Sefer, which is one of the most famous classical commentaries on Rus, which is called the Shoresh Yishai. And by the way, on the side, are you familiar at all with Rav Mirsky's Sfarim Hegyonei Halacha?
Yeah, I used to learn it with him all the time.
So if you take a look, he has a piece on Megillas Rus.
He does.
And there he quotes extensively from this Shoresh Yishai, and he has a whole analysis as to why the author of Shlomo Alkabetz chose that name, Shoresh Yishai. And that has to do with the question of the status of David HaMelech, and was he able to become the Melech Bisrael or not. But again, I don't want to get off on a tangent. What we want to see in this piece from Shlomo Alkabetz in Shoresh Yishai is an overview of all the proofs that we adduced before. Number one, he starts with the Medrash in the name of Rabbi Meir that we saw before, that Machlon and Kilon lo girum, they did not subject Rus and Arpah to Gerus, velo et Bilam, but rather they left them as non-Jewish women. And then he says, Umeata ein lishmo ledivrei ha'Ibn Ezra umisha dorach darko. He completely rejects the approach of the Ibn Ezra and anyone going in his footsteps, that the Gerus took place before Machlon and Kilion married Arpa and Rus. Ein bidvar mamish. A very harsh language against the Rishon for the Gedolei HaMefarshim, one of the greatest commentaries that we have. And now we've let the cat out of the bag, that this whole question of the status of Rus at the time that she married Machlon is going to be a gigantic controversy. All the proofs seem to support the conclusion that she was still a non-Jewish woman, but yet the Ibn Ezra insists that she had already undergone Gerus. Umama od yesh lahafli. I'm absolutely stunned and shocked, says the Rav Alkabetz, sheyale al adas, that Ibn Ezra could begin to entertain such an idea. After all, Tafzir Nami tries to influence Rus to go back to her original status. That could not be if she was a Jewess having undergone Gerus in the past. And he quotes a Sefer which is called Rabbi Shmaria Ha'ikrot, who also adduces these proofs and adds another proof, Anachal Divrei Rabbeinu Tzadik Doshim Nismach, that the Rabbi Seinu tell us that Elimelech's sons died as a punishment for marrying non-Jewish women. And he quotes a sugya in Nazir to prove that they were non-Jews at the time. So that's one source. The other source is the Akedas Yitzchak. Have you heard of the Akedas Yitzchak?
Yes, but I don't know much more.
Also a very ancient commentary on all of Tanakh. Rabbi Yitzchak Ar-Oma, he was a contemporary of the Beis Yosef. And he writes, in the name of the Chachmei HaMishnah, the Chachmei HaMedrash, the Chachmei HaTalmud, that all of the laws of Gerus and the Seder of Gerus are all derived from the Kabbalah of Rus when she made the declaration, Bashar Telchi Eilech, and Amech Ami, and Elokayich Elokai. It means that at that moment when she made that declaration, Rus entered into Gerus. That was way after they left the Stei Moav, on the way to Eretz Knan. And therefore he says, Ma'odas Pole, he can't understand, and he's shocked by the Ibn Ezra, who says that the Gerus took place before the marriage of Machlon and Kilion, and it just doesn't make sense. So basically, if we had time to go through both the Shoresh Yishai and the Akedas Yitzchak, we would see in great detail the myriad proofs, both from the Megillah, from Targum, from the Gemaras themselves, to establish that certainly the Gerus of Rus and that whole process took place way later on, at the time of the marriage of Rus and Arpah. Both of these girls were Nachrios. They were not Gioros at all, and therefore Machlon and Kilion had violated the most severe Avera of a relationship, of a marriage relationship with non-Jewish women. Now, on page 3, you should find a Gemara Bava Basra. Do you see that?
Yes.
There are two parts of this Gemara. They begin on Sadi Aleph Amid Aleph, that's on the bottom, and it carries on to Sadi Aleph Amid Beis. And it's very clear from this sugya in Bava Basra that Machlon and Kilion married respectively two non-Jewish girls. And the language, or how would you say a kinui, like the nickname, is Saraf. Saraf means that they deserve Sreifa. In other words, both names, Machlon Vekilion, are indicative of or allude to Sreifa. And if you look at Tzadi Aleph Amid Beis, Ksiv Machlon Vekilion Uksiv Yoash v'Saraf, Chad Omar Machlon v'Kilion Shmam Lomnikra Yoash Shenis Yashim in Agula Saraf Shenis Chayfu Sreifa Lamokom. Or in another language, the Gemara says Kilion and Machlon Amiloshon Kilion destruction and Machlon Chulin Sha'asu Gufan Chulin. V'kilion sheneschayvu kloya lamokom. I mean, all of this indicates that by marrying Noshim Moavios, they forfeited their right to live and they were destroyed. The Marsha adds it explicitly on the spot, which you'll see here on page 3, on the bottom of the page. Nir lefarisha asu gufan chulin. What does it mean? Machlon, he made his body chulin. He desecrated his body. Bameshen nasu lem noshim moavios nachrios. I mean, what could be more outspoken? And this is the Marsha's understanding.
It's like 10-1 right now. Against
right,
Ibn Ezra.
It's very difficult. You know, to put it's basically the Ibn Ezra against everyone.
Okay.
But you know what? At this point, we want to take a deep breath. And I call it Roman numeral number 2. And that is Rav Shimon Bar Yochai.
Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, we're going way back.
Yeah. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, in the same sugya in Baba Basra, but this is the part that's on Sadi Aleph, on an Aleph on the top of your page 3, said the following. Elimelech Machlon Vekilion Gidole Hador Hayu.
I've heard that. Right.
We're not talking about some sort of secondary, you know, lower echelon personalities. Parnasei Hador Hayu. They were the leaders of their generation. Now, obviously, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai has to ask himself the following question. Why did they all die almost at the same time? Okay, Elimelech was a little bit older, but Machlon and Kilion were young men. They died in the prime of their youth. You know, have you ever been to Yad Kennedy?
Yes.
Do you remember that picture? They have this sculpture of a tree that was cut down, and all you see is like, you know, a couple of feet of the, or a foot or two of the stump of the tree. You know, that JFK, his life was cut down short. He had so much promise.
I don't remember.
And if we would create a Yad Machlon Vekilion, that sculpture would be a perfect symbol. Why were they taken with the Gedolei Ador, the Parnasei Ador?
You were old enough to appreciate the Kennedy shooting? Yeah.
Yes, more or less. Again, I was young, but I mean, I still remember, you know, the experience of hearing the news and so forth and so on. Umit Meiman Nenshu. So now Rav Shimon Bar Yochai has to understand, why were they cut down in the prime of their youth? So I'm going to guess the answer. Kavi Yochal. I mean, this is just a pedagogic tool.
Is they married out?
Correct. They married shiksas.
Oh, I like that.
Okay. This is something that you have to teach in all over the world, right? Mipnei sheyatzu me'aretz l'chutz l'aretz.
But it doesn't go that way.
Because they left the land of Israel. And then the Gemara goes on into a whole discussion here about a famine and when are you allowed to leave Israel if you dwell in the land and there's a famine in the land. And basically the Gemara says that when Machlon and Kilion together with Elimelech left the land of Israel, halachically, they were justified because the famine had reached in Israel such proportions that they needed to go to Moab in order to find salvation, in order to find sustenance. But the Gemara says that still, since they were the Gedolei Ador, they should have applied what we call the Midas Chasidus to have more and an extra element or level of bitachon to have faith in Hashem. They were setting the tone for all of Klal Yisrael to have an absolute despair and give up hope instead of relying on Hashem. So for you and I as rank and file citizens, we're within the bounds of Halacha and you cannot punish us for leaving the land. You know, we can't find the Parnassah. Maybe we have to go all the way to Gibraltar. I don't know how far we have to go. But if you are one of the Gedolei Ador, then you should have given it a little time. HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have protected you with a divine providence that is appropriate for the Gedolei Ador, for the Tzaddikim of the Dor. But hey, wait a minute. What about the fact that they were married, like you say, out? And by the way, this statement of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai is not just some sort of agadic text. It's actually codified by the Rambam in Hilchas Melachim in Perek. Just one second, of course. I have to turn the page here. In Perek Yud Beis, Mihilchas Yisurei Bia. There the Rambam paskins that Baal HaNachris B'Zadon. Alright, this is complicated. Let's go through it very quickly. I see that the clock is running, but Yisrael HaBaal HaKusis, what's the punishment for a Jewish man who has relations with a non-Jewish woman? And the Rambam says that Ben Ktana Ben Sholosh Bas Sholosh Shon V'Yom Echad, as long as she's 3 years old, Ben Gedol Ben Pnuy Ben Eshesish. Okay, Kevan Shebal Akusis Bezodon. Harezu Nereges, she, the non-Jewish woman, is put to death. Again, if we have control, if we have a Jewish court, which by the way means that Arpa and Rus, if we assume, as all the proofs would indicate, were still Nachrios at the time that they, in inverted commas, they were married to Machlon Vekilion, then they would deserve Misa in a Jewish court of law.
Why? Because they, what's the animal part? Because they acted like animals. They caused the Jew.
No,
like...
no. They it's something called takola. Takola means that if a non-Jew creates a takola, for example, an animal that has sodomy with a Jewish person, that animal has to be put to death. That's called takola. It's called pgam. I mean, for that you have to go through sugyas in Sanhedrin.
I see the law is comparable to the laws of
sodomy, right? And then the Rambam says in Hilchas Malachim, we're fast forwarding to Parakei Alachates, also Latzeis Meretz Yisrael Chutzatz Li Olam. Under what circumstances are you allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael and go to Chutz Laretz? He says, if you're going on a temporary basis, you're allowed to go to find a wife. Or you're allowed to go to seek shelter from a guy who's maybe running after you. Again, you have to know what the details are. But that's only on a temporary basis. You're even allowed to go, the Rambam says, on a business trip to Chutz Laretz.
It says to know Torah. It says to learn Torah.
Or to learn Torah. This is all on a temporary basis. Aval lishkon b'chutz laretz asur. Elin kein chazak shom ha-ra'ov. There's a strong famine, it's so profound that Shanasa Shavad Dinar Chitin Bishnei Dinrim. Everything is worth twice its price, and after a while you're running out of funds, you can't buy any Chitin.
So this is why this is the main excuse people use. They don't go to Israel, and this is an excuse they use here in Gibraltar. They don't go to Israel because of Panasa.
Right.
They can't go to Israel because if they went.
They use that everywhere.
And they went, right, they went to Israel, they would make less than half the amount.
It's true!
Right. True. So the Rambam says that under certain circumstances, you're allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laretz. Then he writes the following. This is the part I want you to underline. The afal pi shem mutar lotzeis, even in those very extreme, harsh situations and circumstances of absolute rav, you're allowed to leave. Eina midas chasidus. This is not considered the way the
problem. You're allowed to, but you don't leave with a bracha.
We're not going to advocate. Sharei mach, and what's my proof? Says the Rambam. Sharei machlon v'kilion shnei gedolei adar hayu u'mipnei tzara gedolei yatsu. There was a real serious famine. V'nischayvu kloya lemakom, and that's the Rambam's proof that even when you're allowed technically within the bounds of halach and law to leave Eretz Yisrael and settle in Chutz Laretz, nevertheless it's not midas chasidus. Meaning that he is basically codifying what we saw in Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. And again, the question comes back to haunt us. What kind of tviya do we have against Machlon v'Kilion? They weren't midagdek in midas chasidus? What kind of business is that? They married non-Jewish women. If you're looking for an excuse for the severe punishment that they suffered, you don't have to stretch your arm out to the midas chasidus of leaving Eretz Yisrael. And if we're mentioning Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, let's go a little bit further with Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. And this you'll see on page 4 in the name of the Zohar. The Zohar says, Rus Kevon Shenizgaira, and he has a whole discussion here about the name Rus and how it reflects the fact that she was a Gioress. Now, when did she get that name, Rus, that reflected the fact that she was Gioress? She got it before she married Machlon. She had a name change. We don't know what her Moaviyah name was, but Rus is a genuine, bona fide Hebrew name that was granted to her at the time of her Gerus, and before she married Machlon, meaning the Ksuba at the marriage ceremony between Machlon and Rus had the name Rus on it. Again, I don't know if she got Masayim Zuz, because you marry Gioris, you know, you only pay Masayim Zuz. But anyway, So the Zohar goes on to say, Chas v'sholom shenasa machlon v'igoya. And if you'll argue, maybe Shageiris took place later on. He says, heaven forbid to say, and to even entertain the idea, that Machlon would have married a non-Jewish woman. Elik shenasin is Gaira. She must have undergone the process of Geirus under the supervision of Machlon, probably together with other Rabbanim and so forth, Elimelech, the father, and Kilion. And her Geirus took place before the marriage. So again, although the other proofs that we adduced were sort of like the Yukim, you know, as we medayik, you know, why does Reb Shimon bar Yochai in Masecht Bava Basra find them guilty of leaving Eretz Yisrael? And the Rambam in Melachim supports that. There was nothing explicit. Here we have black and white. Chas v'sholom shenasa machlon v'hi goya. El shenasa nizgayra. Reb Shimon bar Yochai in the Zohar is outspoken that the name Rus was given to her after her Gerus, and that was the name that she had when she married Machlon. And Chas v'sholom, Karamba, heaven forbid, to even entertain the idea that Machlon might have married a non-Jewish woman. So this really puts us in a bit of a bind.
Right, now there's a little bit more support for the Ibn Ezra.
So we're really caught in a bind here. The Ibn Ezra is not out there in standing or hanging from a thin thread. He now has a Zohar and a Rambam. The Rambam is less explicit. The Zohar is more explicit to support his position. Now, if you'll turn for a moment to page 5, the halacha is that the ilas kusis is ma'od ma'od chamur. It's a very serious and severe violation. The niveles, the kusis, as we saw before, is punishable by death. And the language is Shebol Yisrael Takola Al Yada. And we saw before that we compared it, the Rambam compared it to an Eveles Lebehema, where we put the Behema to death because of the din of Takola and Kolon, or Pgam. How would it be possible then that Boaz had relations with a non-Jewish woman, Rus, in which case he was in violation of a severe avera called the takola? She, because she made this takola, is in a situation where, according to the halacha in our batei dinim, in a Jewish bezdin, she has violated a crime that's punishable by death. Now the question I want to ask you is the following. If we accept the Zohar that Rus was already a Gioris at the time that she married Machlon, so isn't it strange that we derive the laws of Gerus from the dialogue that took place between Naomi and Rus? That is the source for the laws of Gerus, specifically the law that Modino saw, that you have to tell them, you know, you have to give the potential ger, you know, an insight into some of the, you give them a taste, a sampling of some of the laws of the Torah, some of the surim of the Torah. It means that at that moment, as we saw earlier, when there was a dialogue between Rus and Naomi on their way from Stei Moav to Eretz Yisrael, that's when she would undergo gerus. So I don't know how to square the Zohar with this sugya in Yevamos. Now, what about the situation of Boaz? Let's take a look on the bottom of page 4. Boaz marries Rus, and if you take a look in Megillas Rus, Perek Dalet Pasuk Hey, the Megillah spells out exactly what the motivation was for Boaz to marry Rus. And it says that after he went through the entire process with the Ploni Almoni of making a kinyan, then it says Lahakim Shem Hames Al Nachloso. That the reason why Boaz is motivated to marry Ruth is because he wants to be Mekayim, the mitzvah of Yibum. That's called Lahakim Shem Hames. Right? The Machlon died without any children, leaving a wife behind him. And now Boaz, as the next kin relative, because Ploni Almoni drops out, he's going to be Mekayim, the din of Yibum. And if you take a look at the Targum says on Pasuk Hey, which is on the bottom of your page 4, Uboili Yavmam Yasa. He came in order to be Meyabim Ha. The Ramban likewise has a whole presentation in Parshas Vayeshev about the sod, the secret that underlies the mitzvah of Yibum. And there he writes that Boaz was Meyabim Rus. Now, one second. If we assume, as all the proofs seem to indicate, and the Pshuto Shel Mikra as well, that Rus was a Moaviah, she was a Nochriah, and a non-Jewish woman at the time that she married Machlon, she only became a Jew long after he died, then there was no Kiddushin, there was no Ishus between Machlon and Rus. And if that be the case, she doesn't fall for Yibum to Boaz. Lahakim Shem Alames, meaning on Machlon, Rus and Machlon were in a relationship which is not halachically recognized as any sort of Ishus, and it would certainly not generate any mitzvah of Yibum. So let's just summarize what we have over here. We're really in a bind. On the one hand, we have so many proofs that indicate that the Gerus of Rus took place much later on. At the time of her marriage to Machlon, she was a Nochriah. On the other hand, we have a whole bunch of proofs, and Rav Shimon Bar Yochai says it explicitly in the Zohar, that Machlon was Megayer Rus, and Kilion was Megayer Arpa before they married them. And the reason why they died was because of leaving, the Aveira of leaving Eretz Yisrael. They should have had a Midas Chasidus and not leave Eretz Yisrael. So the question is, how do we reconcile this? Are we meant to believe? You know, halacha maisa, what should I take away from this? I'm really perplexed. I need a guide to the perplexed. What would you say, Avi? Where do you, you know, if you would vote, what would be your opinion? Should we tip this?
I would say that Ruth was converted later, and when they're using these terms of be the Yibum and this and that, they don't mean halachically. They mean it in terms of just colloquially. You know, because this was a relative of yours to do the evil. I'm not saying I'm right.
So let me just say, Avi, I'm going to imagine that I'm Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, and here's what I'm going to say: Chas v'sholom shenasa malchon v'hi goya. Those are the words of Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. I mean, I didn't write the script. Now I agree with you that the bulk of the evidence certainly points. The scale is very heavily tipped in one direction, in which the psukim themselves indicate, and certainly the Targum says it explicitly, that these guys, Machlon and Kilion, married non-Jewish women. But on the other hand, despite all that proof, and for the fact that the Geirus took place when Naomi convinced her to be Mizgayer, because initially Naomi said, go back to your old ways, because she was, you know, Rus was not a Gioris. That seems to be the weight of the evidence really weighs in favor of assuming that Machlon and Kilion married non-Jewish women. But I just want to leave you with this thought. Chazal speak about Machlon and Kilion as the Gedolei Adar. Is it possible that the Gedolei Adar would marry non-Jewish women without being Megayer them? And if you add to boot...
It's not likely, but it's possible.
But add to boot that they died because of their shortcomings, their deficiency in Amidas Chasidus, that's not the way I would describe someone who's married to a non-Jewish woman. And Rav Shimon Bar Yochai's statement of Chas V'Sholom, I don't know. So this is going to lead us to a point in which we have to really go back to the drawing board and study the laws of Gerus in a very fundamental way and see if we can come up with some explanation that would reconcile the proofs that go in both directions. So that's going to be a separate. Now there is one possible approach that we can take here, which is called the Machlokas Tanoim, and say that Eimei Chinami. Reb Shimon bar Yochai is of the opinion that Machlon and Kilion were Megayer their wives before they married them, and the only claim against them for which they were punished was the Yitzia Meretz Yisrael and the Midas Chassidus that we spoke about. And therefore Reb Shimon bar Yochai in pointing the accusing finger at Machlon and Kilion because they didn't live up to the standards of Midas Chassidus and they left Eretz Yisrael, that's Lashitoso. That really reflects his very opinion in the Zohar, and it's a unique opinion. It's a Das Yochid that the Geirus took place before Machlon and Kilion married these women. But truth be told, that not only do all the other Tanoim reject Reb Shimon bar Yochai according to this presentation, and Reb Shimon bar Yochai is really a Das Yochid, but moreover, all the evidence that we've adduced from the Megillah and from Targum, these are all things that Reb Shimon bar Yochai will have to address. He's going to have to defend his position against all the slings and arrows, all the proofs that we adduced. Again, just a quick overview or summary of the various proofs. Number one, the pasuk that we started with in Megillas Rus, Perek Aleph, pasuk Dal, Vayisulem Noshim Moavios. Clearly, they were not Gioros. The Targum that says that why were they killed? Why were their lives cut short? Al di oven al gzeres member d'Hashem vischatnu bi amamin nochrin, because they married out of the faith. So we have both the Megillah itself and the Targum. Number three, we have the fact that Naomi tried to convince them to go back to Eloheim, to their gods, which would certainly come under the category of a mesis. Number four, what was Naomi thinking when she said that if I only would be able to give birth to two sons, then I would give them both of you, respectively, one to you, Arpa, and one to you, Rus, for marriage, because I love you so much. How could that be? That's a violation of an erev of Eishes Achiv Shalom Bal Yolam, if you assume that the gerus took place, as Reb Shimon bar Yochai assumes, before the marriage to Machlon v'Kilion. The only way of justifying the marriage between what we called Rus and Yankalah, meaning Yankalah was born after the death of Machlon, his brother, if Naomi would give birth to Yankalah, would only be if we assume that there was no Gerus, and therefore there's no marriage between Machlon and Rus. Am I missing any other riots? Let me just see. Oh yeah, and then the language of the Medrash Rabbah, okay, that's already Chazal. Reb Shimon bar Yochai doesn't have to be impressed by that. That lo girum v'lo dilu osam, that when the pasuk says vayisulem noshim moavios, it means they were guilty, Machlon and Kilion, of not being megayer their wives. And Megillas Rus tells us that Naomi instructed Rus before she would go to Boaz, verachatzt, which Rashi interprets as leaving Avodah Zarah behind, indicating that the gerus took place at that point. And as we saw, all these proofs were ammunition in the hands of Reb Shlomo Alkabetz, Reb Yitzchak Ar-Oma, in their various works and commentaries on Megillas Esther against the position of the Ben Ezra, who thought and interpreted the Megillah assuming that Rus and Arpah had already become Gioros before Machlon and Kilion married them. And the Gemara Baba Basra assumes that the word Saraf, which means worthy of being burnt at the stake, a capital punishment, is appropriate for Machlon and Kilion Sha'asu Gufam Chulin. That doesn't sound like they left Eretz Yisrael. The Marsha explains that Asu Gufan Chulin because Nasu Nashim Moavios, Nachrios. But again, on the other side of this whole equation, we have the parish of Boaz being miyabim rus, which would only make sense if indeed the halacha recognized the marriage between machlon and rus, which would mean that rus had already been a gioras. We have the name rus, which was given to her before she married machlon, which indicates that she was already gioras. We have the fact that the Gemara in Bava Basra accuses Machlon and Kilian of no other sin other than leaving Eretz Yisrael and not living up to the standards of Mias Chassid. So we have the Zohar, Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, explicitly saying that Chas V'Shalom, that Machlon would have married a Nochriya. We would add to embellish and strengthen this chas v'shalom that Rus herself, Shebat Lisrael Takola Yoda, would be Chayevis Misa, because a Nachriah, who's nevelis to Yisrael, is put to death. So we really are in a bind over here. And as I indicated, I suggest that we take a shear, designate a shear unto itself to the fundamentals of Gerus, and maybe after we analyze Gerus and how it operates, then and only then can we possibly find some light at the end of the tunnel to answer the question, what exactly was the status of Rus at the time that she married Machlon?